Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other things at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And hey, we're back with what's going to be an amazing episode with a dude we had on already. But before we get to that, you know what I want you guys to know? This is really important, so everyone pay attention. This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there is a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition and LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving in at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. And remember, unless you're on fire or drowning or not seeing any contact with the enemy but walking up and down really big hills and or perhaps a UPS delivery driver or I don't know, probably a bunch of other stuff. I'm sorry this isn't more binary for you guys. You're going to have to think about it. You can never have too much ammo. Yeah, something like that. Hey, joining us, it's Secret Squirrel Chris. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm good. Can I call you Secret Squirrel Chris? Is that okay?
You can call me once, but it'll get a little old after the first five or six times. Go for it. Why not?
I'll just call you Chris. How about that?
Yeah, it works.
So, you were on the show once before, and anyone that listens to the show live got to hear what I consider to be the best episode I have ever done. And you were pretty good too, Chris. I'm not going to lie. So,
yeah, no, I appreciate you carrying me through.
For whatever reason, that episode is gone like tears and rain, and This is just a tribute. So
yeah, me Roy Batty or you Roy Batty?
Man, can we? Well, I mean, background wise, you got way more claim to the Roy Batty thing. But you know, in a world where they're creating artificial human beings with implanted memories, couldn't we both be Roy Batty?
That's true. That's true.
See, I feel good about this.
Yeah.
But so Joe's awesome. He actually got me a bottle of water and brought it to me. Like this is a real operation. Thank you, Joe. So anyway, what can you tell us about your background, I guess, and we'll go from there.
Sure. So, again, I'm Chris. I'm in U.S. military special operations. I'm actually wrapping up a couple of decades, the majority of it being in military special operations, and I'll hopefully be hanging it up soon. And then beyond that, I'm also wrapping up a couple of decades and hopefully many, many more as a legally armed citizen. And having spent the last, last 20 or so years trying to distill the lessons I've learned in special operations so that when I hit that speed bump going off post and I become that legally armed citizen, how to translate one to the other and contextualize that for myself. And, maybe we'll be able to get some insight out of that today as well.
Well, yeah. So I'm super curious. I'm trying to remember what we talked about last time, and I kind of know, and, maybe we'll get to some of it, but, man, capturing lightning in a bottle twice, I don't know we can do that. But what are the biggest things for you, like going from, an operational environment and mindset and rule set and trying to transfer that over to the legally armed citizen side, where are the similarities and where do the similarities end, I guess?
Well, I think the, you know, and we'll talk in terms of benefit first. I think the biggest benefit that I've gained out of my profession is the both macro and micro planning. You know, you hear people say, you know, as they're coming up with, you know, it could be a plan about anything. They're like, well, you know, let's not what if it's a death. When in reality, I personally am a big fan of as far in front of whatever event you can, what if-ing it to death.
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking through, you know, different possible scenarios, you know, contingency planning for contingencies based on a number of factors, you know, METTC, you know, is a common one, which for, you know, for the listeners is, you know, mission, which is something I'll segue into in just a second, enemy. You know, what the, you know, what is your mission? What are the enemy, considerations? You know, what is their, you know, force, strength, capability, and so forth. And you've got terrain, you know, terrain and weather, then troops, like what do you have? What assets do you have? What strengths do you have that you bring to the table? Time, how much time do you have available to, you know, execute a plan, prepare the plan, you know, be it as it may, and then civilian considerations, which basically becomes third party bystanders, that kind of thing. And how to take that way of thinking about things and imagining, like, okay, if this guy all of a sudden unzipped his skin suit and a Terminator crawled out, what would I do? Has been beneficial to me to where Jeff Cooper had a saying, you know, that I actually love because of the meaning behind it, which was, if you're ready, it will never happen.
Mm-hmm.
And in his, you know, hyperbolic way that, you know, that he stated it, what he was saying contextually was, is that, you know, I know you had Dr. William April on, you know, a few episodes ago, that basically, you know, criminals, the kind of people that would attack you, can size you up versus, you know, somebody else out there at the watering hole and say, nah, I'm going to stay away from that guy, and I'm going to go after this guy because this guy looks ready.
Right.
And so that, you know, 360-degree readiness and contingency planning is something that's really, really helped me a lot. One of the biggest things, biggest differences, I guess you could say, would be that first M, you know, at METTC, the mission, and understanding, whereas, you know, could have a gazillion different missions and special operations. However, you know, as a private citizen, my job is to protect myself, protect my family, protect innocent life from serious harm or death. And that's it. It's not to shoot a fleeing shoplifter. It's not to, you know, shoot a guy because he pushed me, because he, you know, we're in a road rage incident or a parking lot incident. It is, you know, my mission is much more narrow. And understanding that and understanding how much more that limits me in my use of force is really, really important, because not understanding that gets you in a lot of trouble.
Well, so we've got let's unpack these. I mean, maybe in order, maybe not. We'll see. I'm particularly ADD most days, so it'll probably be sort of all non-linear, because that's how my mind works. But so we've got pre-need decision making was one of the things that you were talking about. We've also got context, and then we've got wargaming stuff too, right? So I guess let's talk about context and get into that a little bit more. As far as the, it seems like a lot of people confuse the context between things and try and employ stuff that makes really, really good sense in one context and might even be negligent in another context. And frankly, the one that pops into my head the most is light discipline. So like light discipline in a military environment, important, not having it can get you killed, right? But
absolutely,
in a private citizen context, especially inside of your own home, trying to be stingy with white light, I know for a fact has gotten family members shot, you know? So
yep.
You want to talk about that a little bit, or like bounce off that? We got about 2 minutes left in this segment.
Yeah, of course. You know, and I think that context, it also goes back to, you know, considerations where those people who shoot family members, you know, I think their errors are twofold. You know, one, obviously, they didn't use sufficient white light, whether that's reaching for a light switch or a weapons-mounted light or a handheld light, preferably before lighting somebody up with a weapon-mounted light. They failed in understanding that late discipline is not as big of a consideration in the House, but they failed in that because they didn't sit there and think through, okay, what if this happens? What if that happens? What if this happens? Like, here's what can go right. Here's all the things that can go wrong. To steal something from you back a few episodes ago, I was listening the other day. Let me think through all the things that can go wrong and figure out how to mitigate those outcomes through reasonable decision making.
Right. Well, and I mean, in fairness, I've stolen most of that from Claude Werner and his research into negative outcomes and stuff like that. He's been an incredible mentor and influence on me. Any good stuff I've ever come up with that direction has been entirely because of him. Let's do this because we've got to go to break in, 20 seconds. So I'm going to do what I usually do, which is ramble too much to eat up that time. But when we get back, we'll talk with Chris a little bit more about, all the ways that people are wrong or right or stuff like that. But anyway, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977, a legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the EDC-X9, which offers discriminating shooters, 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. And so, funny thing, Chris, I'm the one that writes most of the ads, and it's interesting to me how, despite having read most of these ads quite a bit, I'll get in the middle of one and go, man, what kind of guy wrote this? This is really hard to read, you know?
Like, yeah.
Apparently a challenge. So.
Yeah, that actually reminds me. Your opening ad, you were talking about never having too much ammo, and one of them being if you're not in a firefight and just basically walking up and down mountains, might have too much ammo. Reminded me of, I can neither confirm nor deny, but it might be true that in soft training where you're doing small unit tactics and patrolling with a heavy rucksack up and down hills, when you infill for a 5-day, 10-day field problem and you've got a whole bunch of blanks, and you're like the 240 gunner, a lot of times that first firefight out in the woods after everybody jumps out of the helicopter or off the back of the truck, there might be a lot of spindexing going on because, hey, if you shoot it, you no longer have to carry it.
Yeah, it's funny how that works.
Yeah. Most intense firefight in training is always that first one, so you can get rid of all the extra ammo you don't think you're going to need.
Well, and there's a thing that people now know. So yeah, man, we were talking about, context, and we were talking specifically about, because this is the one that I like to bring up, like white light discipline and stuff like that, and how in one environment that's an amazing idea, and how in another environment it can almost be negligent depending on the circumstances. Can you think any more off the top of your head? Or
I think even in a military context, there's a couple of different directions you can go with light discipline. When I first joined the military, NODs, night vision devices were a thing, not as common as they are now. But so if we're fighting like the big war, war with a peer or near peer, enemy, and we're talking, the World War II style war, then light discipline is going to be a huge deal. And that, talking within the METTC construct that basically the environment, having light discipline is going to be really, really important, whereas the civilian considerations might be lessened because, it's a full-scale war and there's like entire battalions being wiped out and that kind of thing.
Right.
Whereas within a special operations context, we a lot of times practice really good light discipline, but we also have night vision devices. The kicker there is that I can see.
Right.
Right. Yeah, you might, if you're like storming a hill in a World War II type context, be firing blindly into the darkness. But within special operations, like, special operations isn't better than conventional forces. They're just different. And one of the ways they're different is in their target discrimination. Mm-hmm. I don't pull the trigger outside of a black swan event. I, generally speaking, don't pull a trigger unless I am reasonably sure of my targets. Now, what reasonably sure means can change with context and how bad, you know, if we're getting lit up and taking casualties, maybe a little different. But just because I'm not white lighting something doesn't mean I can't see it. And if I can't see it, I'm generally not squeezing the trigger in soft in a combat environment. So if you're in the hallway of your home or barricaded in your bedroom or hear something in your teenage daughter's room and you think she's supposed to be asleep, but in fact she's got her boyfriend over, you definitely need to be seeing your target.
Right.
And hey, if you want to rig up an ops core or a cry helmet and some PBS-15s to do that, awesome. Make sure you know how to target discriminate through that green filter.
Right.
But seeing your target's what's important.
Well, I mean, everybody wants to hunt Jodie Foster in their basement, right? I mean, that's
I'm actually still digging that well. So.
God, I like that we like the same stupid nerd references. That makes the show so much better. So, see, ADD, right? I'm going to try really hard not to drop lines from this movie now. But that's actually kind of an interesting point. So when you talk about like conventional forces versus SF and outside of a black swan event, you are reasonably certain of your target. Do you mind delving into that a little bit more, what you mean? Because I think I have a good idea, but I feel like this might be kind of an interesting conversation that's not had a lot.
Sure. So I actually, in a professional development school many, many years ago, actually wrote a paper on this. And it makes me sound, within the soft community, there's just like anywhere else, there's a variety of people. There's some people that are more aggressive, some people that are more, restrained, I guess, for lack of a better term. And with a good team, you've got, guys balance each other out and you have a good team doing good stuff. So I wrote a paper on the benefits of tactical restraint. Tactical restraint meaning knowing when to shoot, knowing when not to shoot. And so reasonably sure of my target is a contextual matter. And what I mean by that is this, and this is something that we touched on very briefly the last time we spoke, and that was you would have a team of guys on patrol in Afghanistan, and not always, but oftentimes your young guys on the team, newer guys in the team would be a little jumpier, a little more aggressive, a little less certain of what they were seeing in the environment around them. And generally speaking, the older guys that have been around a little bit, tend to be a little more, educated about all the contextual detail they're seeing, while they're just out walking, walking through the woods or through the mountains or through the river valley or whatever in Afghanistan. And so you get a guy on the radio all of a sudden to be like, hey, we got a spotter over here to our right. And, I hear it on the radio. I look over to my right, and I see a, 75, 80-year-old. I mean, he's probably 40, but, I see an elderly-looking man in the woodline smoking a cigarette, farmer, and we're walking through his field, and he's looking at us. Because we look like spacemen.
Right.
Now, maybe he's a spotter, but at this point, he's looking at us just like I would look at foreign troops walking through my backyard.
Right.
And so, what you tell those guys, like, hey, man, like, maybe he is, maybe he is. Let's keep an eye on him, but, like, right now, I see a dude looking at us and nothing more. Can we just smoke that guy? Of course we can, and we don't. And that's an example of like the very easy, like, okay, let's, maybe we go and talk to him. But we're not going to run up and like, butt stroke him and flex cuff him for no reason either, because that turns the whole populace against you. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got, okay, we're in an ambush. We just got ambushed. We have casualties. We're taking more casualties. We're in a really, really bad spot. In that context, I will likely begin firing at known or suspected enemy locations. That's where I just think that particular doorway looks suspicious. that doorway and those windows, and I'm probably going to send some rounds that way because we've got dudes either getting wounded or dying right now, and I'm willing to be a lot freer with my rounds.
Right.
Not a true death blossom. Now, in between those two extreme examples, there's a lot of fluidity in when it's time to truly just go weapons free, Black Hawk Down movie style, just shooting everything that moves. And then, for example, the Taliban is very smart, and they understand that we're warring with them over the affinity and perception of legitimacy among the local populace. So they'll hire some 15-year-old kid who's never seen $200 in his whole life, and offer him $200 to shoot a magazine of AK-47 ammo at us, and he'll do so from like 600, 700, 800 yards away.
Right.
And inevitably what happens, they're trying to bait us into death blossoming and shooting into every window and every door. And you've got to have the maturity to step back and say, okay, wait a minute, are we taking casualties? No. Does the situation take like immediate and radical action, like a death blossom? No. Okay, if we can see the person shooting in our general direction and not coming anywhere close to us, we will shoot him. But I'm not just going to start lighting up every blade of grass.
Right.
So being reasonably certain of your target, the reasonable aspect of that is, yeah, how likely am I to die if I don't pull the trigger?
Well, that's kind of cool, too, as far as and that's a massively, radically different sort of approach than what you see oftentimes in the armed citizen context, and we'll talk about what I mean with that when we get back from the break, because, hey, it's that time again. So we're talking with Chris about weird stuff and Last Starfighter references. Awesome movie. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment also brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it, and that's where Surefire comes in. From the new 1200 lumen EDCL 2T handheld or 500 lumen EDCL 1T handheld to the 1000 lumen XH30 or 1000 lumen X300 Ultra fits in all your old X300 Ultra holsters, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell Aziz light ever again. Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. So we're talking with Chris about awesome 80s movies and other stuff. That was a really good movie, dude. It was ahead of its time. And you know what that movie holds the distinction of, I think?
Oh, what's that?
First movie to utilize computer graphics.
Huh.
Pretty sure. Yeah. Now I want to look that up. So, which I will do as soon as you start talking again. But,
all right.
So, let me ask you this. Do you feel like that as far as armed self-defense goes, that you have more or less room to not act in a military environment versus a private citizen context? Or are they the same? Or are they different? Or, okay, ready to go.
Well, I think, I think that some... some military combat environments, depending on their level of sensitivity, can be, everybody, you hear all the guys griping about, ROE and whatnot, some of that's legitimate and some of that's just griping, soldiers gripe. I think a lot of people probably would be surprised that, sometimes it is, you start shooting the wrong people in a military environment and you're going to face charges just as if you shot somebody in your local mall food court negligently.
Right.
But generally speaking, I would say that, in combat environments, there's more allowances for, I don't want to use the term mistakes, but I guess there's more of an understanding because, I'm accountable to my commander, and commanders going several chains up in a military environment, who at least at some point or another been in my shoes and contextually understand you know, or should contextually understand where I am, what I'm doing, what my thought process is, and we share a commonality. Whereas given your civilian context, and the big thing I've learned moving around America is I've lived in very, I guess, pro-gun, pro-self-defense, benefit of the doubt goes to the honest citizen environments, and I've also been in more more anti-gun, anti-self-defense. The suspicion is immediately cast upon anybody that owns, much less uses a gun, environments, and having to adapt my decision-making accordingly. Because, you know, you could potentially be judged by a jury of your peers, but that means that different things in different places. Right. So in addition to knowing your local laws, but like knowing the social and cultural mores where you live is important as well.
Well, and it's kind of interesting. Well, I was going to say, too, it's kind of interesting because in a perfect world, and I know this is actually where most private citizens get in trouble, in my opinion, but in a perfect world, if it gets to the point where I'm even thinking about making the decision to shoot, the reason why I'm thinking about making that decision is because it's almost it's to the must level, you know. So and when I think of utilizing lethal force, there's can, should, must, and that's for the private citizen where I think most of that should occur. Yep. And I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, and I think, there's your, just like anything else in life, there are, black, white, and shades of gray.
Yep.
Serious physical harm or injury or death to yourself or your immediate family is a must and is a black and white, like virtually everywhere in America. Now, it doesn't mean you won't get arrested. Doesn't mean you won't get charged by an ambitious prosecutor. Doesn't mean you won't face a civil lawsuit, but yeah, it's the must. Like, if I don't pull out my gun, I or someone in my immediate, under my immediate responsibility is going to face serious injury or death. And I think we talked about this a little bit last time. I know that you and I have been, party to a number of, interweb debates and so forth about, intercession, when to fight, when not to fight. And then intercession when it comes to, I'm in a gas station, somebody comes in and robs it, sticks a gun in the clerk's face and starts waving around demanding money. And that's where you go from that must to like, okay, he hasn't shot anyone. He's not pointing a gun at me. Like, I can just basically stand here and twiddle my thumbs and wait for this robber to end and then go, grab my bag of chips and my case of beer or whatever. And that's where that whole pre-planning thing for your average citizen. And what's funny, you mentioned Claude Warner because he had posted something recently about specifically pre-planning. And I think people were basically debating whether or not the aspect of pre-planning that he mentioned was good or bad. He basically said, hey, this is probably more than most people do, probably 99% more than most people do. And so those are the considerations you ask yourself. Like, okay, anybody listening to your show is probably pretty educated and understands like the must, the black and white, like you are like legally and morally, ethically authorized to use force here. It's those times where like, okay, no one's getting shot right now. The gun's not actually pointed at me. It's pointed at the clerk and I'm over here in the corner and I can just shield my kids and ride this out. Or I can, pull my, employ my tools, whatever those tools are and need to be, and go to work to help solve this problem and keep everybody safe. Because you don't go into what Dr. April calls like the freelance administrator of justice, freelance agent of justice who's just running down shoplifters.
Well, and that's actually an interesting thing too, because the scenario that you're painting then becomes so there's you've got the don't act, and then you've got act, and probably the best course of action at that point is if someone is threatening the clerk with a firearm, you're completely legally authorized to shoot them at that point. But how many people are equipped to shoot somebody in the back of the head from ambush, which is the right thing to do if you're going to do anything?
Right. And that's where it's so funny because, I was just listening to Dr. April. And you talked about this recently. What's so interesting about it is that, yes, legally, basically anywhere in America that I'm aware of, you would be legally legally authorized to use force. But you and I both know a number of very switched on people who many times, you know, their default answer is like, you know, okay, well, if, you know, if somebody walks in and, you know, sticks a gun in that clerk's face and I can basically step out the door and walk away, I'm doing it. Not my circus, not my monkeys, not my people, not my problem. I personally, from a moral, just look at myself in the mirror standpoint, do not take that view. But there's a lot of folks out there that say that and advocate that. Basically, they say even though there's no legal duty to retreat, like, you know, for themselves, they've chosen a moral duty to retreat that, like, basically, yeah, if I can get out of there without pulling my gun and get me and my immediate family out safely, then that's what I'm going to do. And that's okay. If they thought through, like, even if they're legally justified, they may still get arrested if they live in an area that's opposed to self-defense, particularly if they shoot somebody in the back of the head, even though they're legally and morally justified in doing so. So first, you got to be the kind of person that's just got the outlook to do that.
Right.
And you're right. I think most people, and you know, it's Western movies and, you know, the, you know, never shoot a man in the back and like all these, you know, we've got these cultural stigmas around that kind of thing. I think a lot of people not having thought it through, and we're having this conversation now and it's great. Hopefully all your listeners say, man, would I straight up just, you know, canoe a dude's head without saying a word? Could you be right to do so in the context I'm describing? But most people, I think, would probably feel compelled because of movies and everything else to say, hey, drop the gun or something, and basically surrender the advantage they have of, you know, basically a counter ambush.
Well, and what's funny about that is there is one instance that I'm aware of that at a mall shooting where someone did that exact thing and they're in a wheelchair for the rest of their life because they confronted someone that was actively shooting a public location, gave them a verbal command while they're actively killing people, and got tagged. It's funny because I remembered, well, actually, we're not going to have to, I'll tell this when we get back from break, but the thing that you're talking about was impressed upon me in a very interesting way at a very early age by my father, who was a cool dude some days, but I'll talk about that in a second. Anyway, we're talking with Chris. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment brought to you by BigTexOutdoors.com. BigTexOutdoors.com is the best place for you to find all your everyday carry needs at the absolute best prices. Maybe you need all the lumens from Surefire at the lowest price? No problem. Spend too much time alone in your room and need an RMR now? Hey, don't laugh at me. BigTexOutdoors.com has those. Glock accessories? Yes. Fast, cheap shipping, 100% hassle-free returns, all that and more. And best of all, BigTexOutdoors.com has Ike. He's a good man and thorough. I like Ike, everybody likes Ike, and you'll like Ike too. Visit BigTexOutdoors.com today and find out what happens when every customer is a friend, not just an order. So before the break, we're in our imaginary convenience store scenario, and we're discussing the tactical advantages of canoeing a dude's head from ambush with no warning. And I remember being a little kid and watching a movie with my dad. And I don't remember the movie. I wish I did. But the good guy shoots one of the bad guys in the back. And I remember looking at my dad just horrified, like, Dad, he shot him in the back. And my dad just looks at me nonplussed, without skipping a beat, says, well, if you have to do it, that's the best place to. And I'm like, huh. And my dad's a SF dude from the early 70s, late 60s, right? So his upbringing was interesting, right? And the environment that he learned in. But it's funny, though, how, you know, at least for some of the people I meet, they don't necessarily consider what armed self-defense might look like, especially if you're called upon to act or moved to act. A lot of people have a problem with stuff like that. Why do you think that is?
I think realistically, I think that there's a lot of it's so cliche. So when it comes to resistance to
hard good ideas.
When it comes to overwhelming violence, ruthless violence, people are resistant to it. And I think I hate, it's so cliche to blame. And ironically, I'm going to blame, you know, in part, like movies, media, so forth, in the opposite direction the way they usually get blamed. Because normally, like, the reason that, you know, our society is so violent is because of movies and media and everything else, which is, you know, well, gosh, I wonder what was going on in the Middle Ages. But so the trope, and I'll be honest with you, a trope that I hate in modern media, hate. And the only, the, like, it, Last Samurai, Tom Cruise, Ken Watanabe, I want to say his name right. Last Samurai, you seen it?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. It's the one movie that I've ever seen that, like, had something where I was just like, yes, fist pump. So in modern movies, ever since I was a little kid, and God knows that there's plenty of service members who struggle with PTSD, and it's a real thing. And I absolutely don't want to, I don't want to belittle that or anything else, but, that being said, the message you get pounded into you from when you're a little kid is that, you know, violence and taking life basically is not natural for human beings, screws you up for life, you know, and basically you're going to be a wreck. Actually, The Departed was another one. Mm-hmm. And so in Last Samurai, Tom Cruise is all jacked up from the messed up stuff he did in the Indian Wars or whatever, and Ken Watanabe, the samurai character, says to him, you have bad dreams, because he's having nightmares and stuff. And he says, yeah, all soldiers have bad dreams. Ken Watanabe says, only ones who are ashamed of what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really, really, it was just one incident of Hollywood actually, somebody in Hollywood actually pushing back against that trope of, like, you're gonna use your weapon to defend your life or defend innocent life, and it's gonna haunt you for the rest of your life. And maybe it will. Everybody's different, and you can never tell who's gonna be the guy to do what needs to be done and sleep like a baby, and who's gonna be the guy. But I will tell you that normally, in my experience, folks with PTSD and everything else, it's not the you know, simple act of using violence that messes with them. It's the things that they fail to do, or that they feel that they should have done but didn't get done. It's the guy that died that they couldn't save. But it's not simply like I took a human life and now I'm haunted forever, because I will tell you that in my experience, now granted, I am working with a very different selected population.
Sure.
But guys who make a righteous kill, and I don't mean it in a religious context. I mean it as in, you know, they were justified in, like, okay, this was an ISIS fighter who raped and tortured his way across northern Iraq and northeast Syria, and now he is dead. Because he decided to shoot at me.
I'd feel pretty good about that, Chris, if it were me.
Yeah, that's a win. And so human beings, to the idea that, I guess, violence is unnatural for people, violence is unnatural for 21st century North Americans and Western Europeans,
yep.
And not counting anybody south of the border of Mexico. That it's unnatural for us within the last few decades. But the truth of the matter is that, yeah, violence for survival is literally the most natural thing a human being can do. You know, the fight for survival, that's why we're here. We're the descendants of people who fought most successfully for survival. So movies and, you know, books and everything else has conditioned us that you know, I brought up The Departed as well. When Leonardo DiCaprio's character is going and talking to the psych, and he asks, you know, if the cops who use their guns in the line of duty that come and talk to her, if they cry. And she says, sometimes. And he says, and I'm not saying this is correct, but he's like, they joined the force to use their guns. But he basically calls out that a lot of times people will act remorseful for even justified action, because that is what our society, through media, through pop culture, has conditioned them that they're supposed to do, right? I'm supposed to act haunted by, these things that I've done. I'm supposed to act, or I'm supposed to be haunted over taking a human life, even though they were going to take other people's human lives in horrible ways. When the reality is, and then some people start thinking, well, I don't feel that way, so what's wrong with me? And that actually starts messing with them.
Right.
And so I think we definitely place a stigma on violence, irrespective of its justifiability, and I think that's an incredibly unhealthy attitude to have. sometimes it's a good thing to bust a cap, and some people need to die.
Well,
and that's okay. That's the way the world is.
Yeah, and that's the man. Oh, a bunch of people are going to listen to this and go, "Ooh!" But some people need shot. You know, that's frankly,
yeah.
It. Some,
and to be clear, yeah. In the civilian self-defense context, you're not shooting to kill. You're shooting to stop them from perpetrating the actions which are causing you to use lethal force. Of course,
right.
And yeah, but ultimately, yes, yeah, some people have essentially forfeited their right to life and safety by engaging in murder, rape, aggravated assault on other human beings.
Well, and that's the other thing too that I don't think a lot of people really understand is that so there's this idea that all human life is valuable, and I would argue no, it's not. That my life has more value as someone that's tried to do good things for a lot of people than the life of someone that has, you know, mercilessly preyed on every single thing around them for their entire lives. And if I have to pick between me, you know, going home at the end of the day, or this imaginary whatever, then I'm not going to feel bad about that even a little bit. And certainly, you know, I don't think anyone listening should either. If you've done everything you can to avoid whatever conflict you suddenly find yourself in, then any action that you are forced to take at that point is, hey, that wasn't your choice. That was a decision they made. But we gotta go in about a minute and a half. Chris, I super appreciate you coming on. In fact, I liked you coming on so much, I think I'll have you on next week. How's that sound?
You know, if you want to put your listeners through that, I'm more than happy to do it.
Nah, it's all right, dude. So I super appreciate you coming on, man. I think this episode was good, too. I don't know if it was as good as the last one, but it might be. I can't remember. It's a good tribute, though. So anyway, hey, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio, and keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out. We appreciate it. And hey, you can listen to us on Spotify now, and those get uploaded super quick. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.